That, and we're going to go straight to our feature issue this morning. Mm-hmm. And the recent news of Saudi Arabia having yet more execution plans, this time of three well-known Salafi scholars, has sparked international condemnation. The United Nations, prominent human rights groups, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, the chorus is overwhelming. The three individuals are Sheikh Salman Al-Ouda. He is an internationally known Islamic scholar, an interesting personality. Awad Al-Qarni, a well-known preacher and academic, an author. And Ali Al-Umari, a popular broadcaster. And just very interestingly, amongst the three of these guys, mm-hmm. they have something like 30 million Twitter followers on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
So it's not as if they've got a low profile. Mm-hmm. They were arrested in September 2017 during an alleged anti-corruption operation by Saudi authorities. Online to help us understand what on earth is going on is Naeem Jina, director at the Afro-Middle East Center, AMEC for short. Naeem, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I don't appreciate your jibe against Hanif Hendrik.
All right. let's have a look at Saudi Arabia. Now, I'm sure Hanif will stay awake. It's just a joke. But but Naeem, let's have a look at the situation that we have here in Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is really serious stuff. Sheikh Salman Al-Ouda is, I mean, who doesn't know who he is? But what amazes me is that these three individuals have such a huge following in social media. They are relevant, and I think it was Jamal Khashoggi who said that Sheikh Salman Al-Ouda would be a target of the Saudi authorities because he was a moderate. So what do we make of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Shafiq, you know, between the three of them, more than 30 million Twitter followers, Salman Al-Ouda himself, 14 million of that 30 million. So huge following. He's got 50 books to his name, 50 books that he's written, as well as a number of other articles, papers, etc. The one thing I found about Salman Al-Ouda, Shafiq, is that, and I don't want to differ with Jamal, but nevertheless, it's really, I think, part of the problem for the Saudis with him is that it's difficult to put him in a pigeonhole. Jamal said he's a moderate, but of course these days, you know, who knows what that means. But on one day, if he thinks that the Saudi royal family has done something that is good and useful, he'll say that. And on the next day, if he thinks they've done something idiotic, he would say that too. He seems to be the kind of scholar that that is guided definitely by his conscience, rather than what anyone else would like him to say, or those in power would like him to do, etc. And I think that this, for the Saudis, this is a huge problem. They cannot accept, and certainly under Mohammed bin Salman, they cannot accept anyone that is going to act according to what he or she thinks is right, rather than what they tell them is right. And so someone like him is a big problem. And then, of course, as you said, the arrest of these three, as well as a number of other ulama, was September 2017, a month or 2 months before that sweep against a whole lot of business people and members of the royal family, etc., who were locked up in the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh. And many of us feel that, the ulama that were arrested in that September 2017 sweep were those who would not have kept quiet when the other attack happened. And I mean, you know that the people who were released from the Ritz-Carlton were released after they signed over large parts of their assets to, we're not entirely sure to who, whether it was signed over to Mohammed bin Salman or signed over to the state or whatever the case is. And people like these three would not have kept quiet at that ransoming of these people.
No, absolutely. And Sheikh Salman Al-Ouda, because he obviously is the most prominent of all the characters, I think a lot of commentators would agree with the point you've made, that in a sense he has been quite unpredictable. But he's also undergone an interesting journey, hasn't he, in the sense that over the years, he's transformed, in a sense, to becoming a proponent of a constitutional democracy. And according to reports that I've read, hugely affected by the so-called Arab Spring of 2011. That seems to have been kind of like a political turning point for him. Am I correct if I assume that?
I'm not sure that I'd fully agree, Shafiq. I think that his thought has certainly evolved, and that goes for many people, and of course we admire that. So his more conservative kind of thinking a few decades ago was quoted, for example, by Osama bin Laden as the backing of a scholar for Al-Qaeda. But subsequently, Salman Al-Ouda has been very critical of Al-Qaeda and what they've done, etc. But in terms of his notion of a constitutional monarchy or some form of democracy in Saudi Arabia, etc., let's remember that in 1993, he was one of the group of scholars, etc., dissident group that was created that called itself the Committee for the Defense of Legitimate Rights. Mm-hmm. Many of its, some of its members were based outside the country. Some of its members left the country after they came under attack. He remained, but that was in 1993 already. So it was, 30 years ago.
Yes,
that happened. So I don't think that that he's. His kind of attention to the notion of democracy and democracy for Saudi Arabia began only 2010, 2011. I think it's been there earlier. Perhaps it was articulated more strongly, more recently, but even some of his books before then, that kind of thread is there.
No, absolutely. And before we take a quick break, and we will be coming back after the break, the other two personalities who could face execution, Awad al-Qarni and Ali al-Omari. Awad al-Qarni, also a very, very well-known public figure and quite popular in terms of, they call him a preacher, but that's a bit of a misnomer in one sense, but also high profile.
Yes, so all three of them, ulama. And all three of them, particularly Ali al-Omari and Awad al-Qarni, very popular on the media, TV, etc. They both have shows on television, and Awad al-Qarni on radio as well, regular appearances, etc. And again, Ali al-Omari, for example, his big sin, as far as the Saudis are concerned, is that he's called for more rights for women. He's also been quite a campaigner against Muslim extremism, but the women thing, I think, is what really got him into trouble. Awad al-Qarni, like Salman al-Ouda, his arrest was because the two of them called for, this was after the Saudi, Egyptian, Emirati, Bahraini blockade on Qatar. The two of them called for unity between Saudis and Qataris, who are really family members to each other. Salman al-Ouda tweeted that call for unity, and that got him arrested. Mm. Of course, in a sense, the reasons for the arrest are bigger than that, but that was the excuse.
Interesting stuff indeed. If you just tuned in, it's Ramadan AM on Voice of the Cape. We're discussing the execution plans for three well-known Saudi scholars, Sheikh Salman al-Ouda, Awad al-Qarni, and Ali al-Omari. We're going to take a quick break. Naeem Jinnah from Amex, stay online. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Ramadan AM show. The last break, you bought some food, went to Turkey, bought some more food, and then bought some more food, but we got through it. Our special guest, Naeem Jinnah, Afro Middle East Center. And, of course, we're talking about recent news that three Saudi Arabian scholars stand to be executed. Mind-blowing stuff. Sheikh Salman al-Ouda, Awad al-Qarni, and Ali al-Omari. Oh. Naeem, let's quickly get back to the interview. You mentioned before the break that the straw that seems to have broken the camel's back for at least two of the people we've mentioned is their support for Qatar when Saudi Arabia decided to boycott the country.
Well, it wasn't really support for Qatar. I mean, their concern was that you have families that are both parts of the family are Qatari, parts of the family are Saudi, etc. Uh-huh. The Qataris and Saudis are really one big family, one big tribe, if you like. And so all they were saying was that there should be unity between the two. They didn't say that the blockade should be lifted. They didn't say anything political. But that in itself, both in Saudi and Arabia, both in Saudi Arabia and in the United Arab Emirates, basically even mentioning the name Qatar these days can get you locked up. So that was the excuse for these two at least. But what happened subsequently is a few months ago when Salman Al-Auda, for example, was brought to court, he was accused by a special prosecutor of 37 charges of terrorism. And so, you know, the excuse was the tweet, but then they made up all these other things, links to alleged links to what they refer to as terrorist organizations. Then strange thing, accused of exposing injustices towards prisoners and of, get this, expressing cynicism and sarcasm about the government's achievements. And then he's also accused of being affiliated to the Qatari royal family. So these are the kinds of things that have been made up. And on the basis of that, he's been sentenced to be executed.
Naima, what about the whole legal process itself? We've actually spoken to certain personalities in the kingdom who we can't identify, who've said that some of these people end up in these courts having not even seen a lawyer, and they end up in court on the day of court not even knowing what they're being charged for.
Yes, this is not unusual practice. They don't have the right to legal representation. They have virtually no rights. They don't have the right to know what they're going to be charged for or what they're going to be convicted for, etc. They appear, judgment gets handed down, and that's it. So what we kind of understand as being legal process certainly has a different meaning in Saudi Arabia.
Now, if we look at this whole scenario, internationally there is, I suppose, kind of like a very muted response, I suppose. Most of the indignation seems to be coming from civil society and human rights NGOs. Have the Saudis kind of been given a green light because of the climate in the U.S. and the presidency of Donald Trump?
Very much so. I think, you know, a part of it, of course, is that even within civil society, the noise around these issues is not as great as it should be. But they definitely do feel well protected by the White House and Donald Trump in particular. Look, you had in the recent past two big incidents. One was, of course, the murder of Jamal Khashoggi in a brutal way, chopped up his body, etc., in a Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And Donald Trump went out of his way to ensure that that Mohammed bin Salman's name cannot be mentioned as being in any way responsible, despite the fact that even the CIA thinks that that was the case. So he certainly protected him there. And then last month, which was perhaps in some ways as important a test balloon from the Saudis, they publicly beheaded 37 people, mostly political dissidents, including one or two teenagers. One of them was crucified. It didn't evoke the kind of outrage around the world that one would think would be evoked by the beheading of 37 people. Can you imagine if this was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's people that did this? But this was the Saudi kingdom. It's a sovereign state, legitimate, some might say not, but at least it's a member of the United Nations. They chopped off 37 heads, and not such a big deal. And this is a country that is a member of the Human Rights Council of the United Nations. So clearly for the Saudis, this was an indication that in the current climate, they can do whatever they like with complete impunity, and there will just be a few noisy people on the sidelines that will make a bit of noise, and that too will pass very soon. So they killed 37 people last month. Mm. Now they've announced that they're going to kill three very prominent others, and they were correct. Where's the huge outrage? You know, a little bit from Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, a few media minutes or centimeters like this, and then, you know, it'll be over.
Yeah, it's a very, very sad, tragic. Final question, Naeem. Is the decision on these three scholars, is it in any way reversible, or is the Saudi injustice system incapable of appeals or reversals or whatever? I don't know which is the correct legal term to use, but I mean, is there any possibility that their sentences could be lifted in any sense?
Yes. The king can decide so. I mean, you know, it's the case in many countries where the head of state can make that kind of decision to pardon someone that's already been found guilty and convicted. And so that could happen. Whether he has the inclination to do so is another matter. We do know or have a good sense that despite the fact that he's basically given the country to his son to run, there are issues on which he and his son don't always agree, and you know, the Palestinian issue is one of them, for example. And so when he actually is cognizant of what's going on around him, he might object to something that his son has said or done. We also know that between the father and the son, Salman, the father, has been historically much closer to the ulama in general than his son, who is trying his level best to undermine the ulama in Saudi Arabia as much as he can, in general. That includes the ulama who have been, you know, caught ulama in the past. So whether Salman, after Eid, kind of wakes up and decides maybe these guys are not that bad after all, and, you know, let them go, that is a possibility.
Naeem Jinnah, Director, Afro Middle East Center. Shukran, thanks for chatting to us early in the morning, and do enjoy the rest of Ramadan.
JazakAllah. Let me get back to you.